Well, we are a little bit more than a month into the school year, and obviously a lot of concerns about school, public education, and funding, and teacher salaries, and more. One of the biggest issues regarding the schools, of course, is always safety, and that relates to the bullying problem and how to prevent it or mitigate it. The month of October is National Bullying Prevention Month, and a lot of programs nationally, statewide, and locally to try to work to prevent bullying in the public schools. And we've got Rachel Valentine here. She's the community education director from the Orange County Rape Crisis Center, which has some programs to prevent bullying of their own. Rachel, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Aaron.
So for National Bullying Prevention Month, obviously there's not a whole lot that the OCRCC does specifically for this month, but there are programs that go on all year long that the Orange County Rape Crisis Center does to prevent bullying in the schools. So talk a little bit about those programs and how they relate to the mission of the center in general.
Yeah, absolutely. So probably our most well-known program for parents who are listening is our Safe Touch program, which operates in the elementary schools. It's mostly a empowerment and boundaries education program for the younger children. But as they get older, we start to shift the way we talk about boundaries in preparation of getting them to middle school and high school. So we start to shift from talking about how your body belongs to you, so no one should be touching you or treating you in a way that you don't like, to how that applies to other people. If your body belongs to you, that means that your neighbor's body belongs to them. So we start talking about moderating and regulating your own behavior so that you're not engaging with other people in a way that causes harm. That gets us ready for our Start Strong program, which operates in the middle schools and high schools. And we work with the Compass Center to deliver that programming. And that is really focused on sexual harassment and relationship violence prevention in a way that actually addresses bullying in the process.
Yeah, and the way you described it, I mean, it makes perfect sense that you start young in the elementary schools, you teach people not to bully, you teach people to respect other people's boundaries, and that leads to a pattern of behavior that hopefully mitigates the prevalence of sexual violence down the road, right?
Yeah, so that's the theory of change that we're operating on. Mm-hmm. So several researchers who look into sexual violence prevention have proposed the theory that sexual harassment in middle school is a building block behavior that, if unchecked, eventually leads to more severe forms of sexual violence later on. That is how the Rape Crisis Center ends up getting involved in bullying prevention, because much of what gets called bullying at the middle school level is actually sexual harassment. Mm-hmm. But what we also find is that it's not just sexual harassment. Recent research by the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network, or GLSEN, what they're called for short, shows that the majority of bullying that children experience in middle schools and high schools is can be better described as identity-based harassment. So when we think of bullying, and I think even using the word bullying is a little bit misleading, because, I mean, for you, Aaron, what's the image that comes to mind for you when you hear the word bullying?
You talk about someone on the playground, like the bigger kid pushing the little kid around.
Right, absolutely. So this bigger kid, little kid thing,
right.
We're talking about the schoolyard bully. We tend to be thinking about a kid who has maybe problems at home. They have some sort of unchecked aggression or anger issues. And certainly aggression and anger play into bullying. But I think we would be much better prepared to actually prevent bullying if we stop to really think about what leads children to do this. The most reliable statistics show that somewhere around 30% of students experience bullying, almost 30%. That's a lot, right? So if we imagine that bullying is caused simply by kids having problems at home or kids having unchecked aggression, that's a lot of unchecked aggression and anger.
Right.
And it tends to sort of frame the problem as some sort of abnormal behavior from individual children. The truth is that bullying behaviors are rooted in dynamics of domination and aggression. And the dynamics of domination and aggression are pervasive throughout our culture. This is a societal issue. This is not an issue of a few individual kids with individual problems. The rhetoric of dominance and aggression is modeled in the films that we watch, in the video games that are popular. It's modeled, amongst the politicians and the way our politicians bully their opponents.
I was just thinking about this. Like, this is something that's in the news right now.
Absolutely.
Like, people who are trying to excuse obviously inexcusable behavior by saying, well, everyone does it. That just makes the problem worse, actually.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, bullying is a learned behavior, mm-hmm. and it's not just an issue of kids learning. When we say learned behavior, we're not talking about just in the home. We're talking about in our society at large.
All right. Speaking with Rachel Valentine, Community Education Director for the Orange County Rape Crisis Center, we're talking about bullying prevention programs because it's National Bullying Prevention Month. And I'm going to get back to the Safe Touch program. How does that work in the schools and what results have you seen from it?
Yeah. When we talk about bullying prevention, I like to talk about all of our programs combined. So that's the Safe Touch and the Start Strong programs.
Right.
So they operate through the schools. We have really, really great relationships with both the Chapel Hill-Carrboro City Schools and the Orange County Schools that invite us to join their students in their classrooms. In elementary, we're just in their regular classrooms. We see them once a year, and we're delivering these empowerment lessons and skills-based lessons around boundary setting and boundary respecting. At the middle school and high school level, these are multi-session programs that we see them several times a year, each year through 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th grade through their health classes. And it's a part of their healthy relationships unit. So we have a much better time measuring change at the middle school and high school level because it's just a little bit easier to survey students once they get a little bit older. We've found that we do see pretty significant increases in the willingness of students to act as bystanders or as active bystanders, or as we call them, upstanders in the classroom, to protect their fellow students against sexual aggression and sexual bullying.
Okay.
We also see an increase in the, students' willingness to talk about and to seek consent for sexual contact as we get into the high school lessons. So those are both sort of what we would call individual and relationship level indicators of violence prevention that are really promising.
And I want to get back to the idea of bullying as identity-based harassment, because you're introducing this to me for the first time, and I'm hearing this for the first time, but it makes sense. I could think about bullying and the way that dynamic takes place. So if you've got programs in the schools that teach people that racism is wrong, that men and women are equal and deserve to be treated that way, that gays and straights are equal and deserve to be treated that way, then that translates into people treating each other better in general, right?
That's the idea. And I think that we also need to understand, like we were saying before, that this is both an individual problem as well as a societal problem.
Yeah.
So we advocate and we work in prevention strategies that span the whole social ecology. So we're talking about at the individual level, classroom-based education programs like ours and like others that are in the schools that teach empathy, that teach skills development for nonviolent or non-harmful communication, that teach anger management, and also that teach stereotype correction. Those are absolutely a part of prevention, but that's not the only key to prevention. We also need to be looking at bystander intervention. A lot of what I grew up with as bullying prevention education was focused on what you need to do to protect yourself or what you need to do when it happens to you.
Stand up, fight back kind of stuff. Yeah.
Exactly. So we're not in the business of teaching a generation of kids how to protect themselves from harm. We're in the business of teaching a generation of kids how to engage with one another without causing harm. So that individual level stuff is part of it. And then at the relationship level, we're teaching these bystander intervention skills. And not just teaching the skills, but also working with students to understand what are your barriers to acting as a bystander? Why is this hard for you? And how can we work creatively around that? How can we find ways for you to engage that actually feel comfortable for you based on your personal style and your personality? Because we're not all Superman-type interveners. Some of us are a little bit more quiet about it. And that's okay.
That's got to be really difficult in a world where there's just so much pressure to not be empathetic, or there's so much evidence in society of people who are not empathetic and getting rewarded for that behavior. Like, I was watching the second presidential debate on Sunday night, and at the same time, I was trying to distract myself by reading Being Mortal by Atul Gawande. And that book is all about the need for doctors to be empathetic with patients when it comes to end-of-life decisions. And I'm reading that book, and I'm watching the debate, and the contrast between the two. Like, there is no empathy going on from some of the candidates that I was hearing. And reading this book and listening to that, just the gaping gap between the two was absolutely ridiculous to me. And if we could just be more like the book that encourages empathy and less like the presidential debate, but 80 million people are watching the presidential debate, so how do you combat that?
Well, and I think that what's hopeful to me about that is that I do get to spend quite a bit of my time throughout the week in schools with kids, and their natural state is empathy. They want to act through empathy. They want to encourage empathy in others. And it's sort of the world outside of their classroom that's beating it out of them. So the more that we can, as adults in their lives, encourage those empathetic responses, hopefully they can sort of survive this challenge of growing up in a society that really doesn't encourage it. And that's where these higher level interventions are really important. So we've talked about the individual level, we talked about relationship level. All individuals and relationships exist within communities. So some of the best and most effective work that is being done in schools to prevent bullying is actually policy level stuff. It's really, really fascinating. So activities that encourage school connectedness are proven to reduce both the incidence of sexual harassment, relationship violence, bullying violence. It also increases students' overall academic achievement. School connectedness is one of these amazing set of activities that we've come across, that the research shows that it has shared protective factors across all of the things that we're interested in promoting for our kids.
What's an example of school connectedness?
So school connectedness is basically the extent to which you feel some allegiance to the school community. So students who experience high levels of school connectedness are students who have some kind of special or particular engagement with positive relationships with adults in their school, positive associations with involvement, so club involvement, sports involvement. Students who already experience high levels of academic achievement tend to have higher levels of school connectedness as well. So activities that can increase school connectedness are things like responding to bullying type behaviors or sexual violence behaviors with restorative justice practices. Research on suspension is showing across the board that when you replace suspension, which ultimately removes students from the school environment.
Makes them less connected. Right.
When you replace that with alternatives like restorative justice practices, like mindfulness practices, like reverse suspensions when you actually bring the parents into the school rather than sending the kids away from the school, that those are decreasing the incidence of violence in schools, like within the school year.
Is this something that we're seeing in Chapel Hill Carborough?
So Chapel Hill Carborough City Schools has for many, many years been operated with the positive behavior intervention and support model. So they have a long list of interventions that happen prior to suspension. Of course, I think, you know, the ways that those are enacted depend a lot on, it depends on school. Between the schools, school to school, who is in charge of enacting those PBIS interventions. But it's a really progressive model, and it's one that has worked really well in the schools. It's something that we're still kind of working on how that works, particularly with sexual violence incidents, because sort of peer mediation and moderated interviews and that sort of thing tend to not be a best practice when it comes to sexual harm. So we're working with school personnel currently in Chapel Hill Carborough City Schools to develop a protocol for response to sexual harassment that is both trauma-informed as well as encourages school connectedness.
All right. Speaking with Rachel Valentine, OCRCC, OCRCC.org is the Rape Crisis Center's website if you want to find out more about these programs and others that they do all year long. Rachel, we got to let you go, but before we do, what can individuals do to make the situation better when it comes to bullying, sexual harassment, violence in schools?
Well, one of the first principles of trauma-informed response, and we do need to recognize that bullying violence does create trauma for people, is to start by believing and supporting the person who comes forward to say that this has happened to them, even if it doesn't look like or sound like the type of bullying that comes to mind when you think about bullying. If somebody's coming forward to say that they've been experienced this type of harm, we need to start by believing and then go from there in terms of thinking about what the educative response can be for the person who's done it to them.
OCRCC.org if you want to find out more about these programs and others that the Orange County Rape Crisis Center does all year long. Rachel Valentine, thank you so much.
Thank you, Aaron.